From our international tape library, Hermano Pablo Ministries is pleased to present a message from our series, Prime Time Messages.
I was praying in a church service and saying to God, God, I can't do it. It's too much that you're asking of me, and I'm not ready for it. So please take this burden off of me because I can't do it, God. You know my heart. I'm honest with you. I'm sincere with you. I would like to do what you want me to do, but it is impossible. I can't do it. What God was telling me was that he wanted to use me as a missionary. And I was saying, God, give it up. I can't go. Forget it. I had been born on the foreign field. I was born in Puerto Rico of missionary parents back in 1921. And I was saying, God, forget it. I can't go. I don't want to be a missionary. My parents were missionaries. I was born on a foreign field. I know what it's all about. I know all of the adventure that there is in missionary, and it's already lost. The flame is out. The interest is gone. I don't want to be a missionary. So forget it, God. I don't want to go. And God would come back to me and say, son, why do you think that I allowed you to be born in the field? To learn of the people and to become one of them and their language and their idiosyncrasies and their structure and their life and such so that you could work among them. But I said, God, that's the whole thing. If you hadn't done that, then it would be an adventure to me. I don't want to be a missionary. Forget it, God. Don't send me. I remember one time I got down on my knees and said, Lord, during this siege of time, because it didn't just have this night that I'm speaking to you of was the Acme night, the culmination night. But before this, leading up to it, several experiences I had. And one night I said, God, send some gullible American that doesn't know what it's all about. I don't want to go. And I meant it with all my heart. I didn't want to go. Well, that night, in prayer, God putting the pressure on me and putting the pressure on me and putting the pressure on me and putting the pressure on me. I want you to go, son. I want you to go, son. And me saying, God, I can't. And this was 2 or 3 months already into the conversation that God had been having with me. I can't go, Lord. Please don't ask it of me. I can't go. And I began to cry. Please, God, take the pressure off me. I can't go. When suddenly before my eyes, in prayer, there loomed up a mental picture of cotton. Fields, infinite fields of cotton, white cotton in every direction as far as I could look, white cotton, and it was ripening on the stalks and rotting on the stalks and falling to the ground and rotting on the ground. And I knew what it was. God didn't have to tell me. This is souls that are going to hell because you won't go out there and reap them. They're ready to be plucked. Ready to be plucked. All you have to go out there is put your hand under them. They'll fall into your hand. And I kept saying, please, Lord, take this from me. I can't go. I've told you I can't go. I'll do anything you want me to do in the States, but to go abroad, I can't go abroad, God. I'll do anything you want me to do up here, but not down there. I won't go anymore, Lord. I was but 17 years old, and I figured that at that age, I already had my whole life lined out before me. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew where I wanted to go. I had goals. I had ambitions. I had a life to live, and God wasn't going to take it from me. That's the way it was. But the souls thing, the burden thing, the foreign field thing, God kept pressuring me with this. And then the picture changed. Not suddenly, slowly, like a long, slow lap dissolved in a movie. And it changed from the white cotton to my own cinnamon-skinned, black, brown, Indian-colored, whatever, mestizo, the different colors of my own brothers and sisters of Latin America. And there were faces. It wasn't cotton, now it was faces. Faces of millions saying, please come and tell us the story. We want to hear it. And by this time, I was crying profusely. And I was saying, please, God, take it away from me. I can't go. And I was weak in my body. Please, Lord, I can't go. I can't go. Take it away from me. But I was saying it slower, and I was saying it weaker, and I was rejecting with less strength and rejecting with less power until finally, I said, God, I guess you won't have it any other way. And it was like seeing myself laying down on a guillotine. The knife above, my head over the chopping block, the basket waiting to receive my head, the latch string hanging there, in God's hand near the latch cord. And I said, God, you won't have it any other way. And you won't be satisfied. And you won't give me peace. And you'll not let me rest. And I'm so young. Okay. You're bound to kill my ambitions. You're bound to kill my goals. You're bound to kill my happiness and my joy and my life. Go ahead. Go ahead. Kill me. Pull the latch string. And when I said pull the latch string, for the knife to come down and chop all of my life off, I discovered there was no guillotine, no knife, no latch string, no hand waiting to pull anything, no basket waiting to receive anything. I discovered rather that it was the finding what I thought was going to be the end of me was the beginning of me. And what I figured to be the absolute giving up of everything was the actual finding of everything. For in an instant's time, my whole attitude changed. And in an instant's time, I mean right there at that moment of prayer, I couldn't wait to get to the foreign field. This happened in Rhode Island at Zion Bible Institute in East Providence, Rhode Island. The year was 1900. And 1938. And I had been already in school since the beginning of that year, since September of that year, and this must have happened November or so of that year, 1938. And that little, simple saying, okay, God, go ahead, pull the latch string, you won't have it any other way, there go my ambitions, there goes all of my future, there goes all of my desires. There goes all of my plans for my life. I discovered that I was wrong, that I didn't know myself, that my ambitions were far too low, that my plans were clumsy, that my goals for my life were ridiculously elementary, that what I wanted for me was so small, so elementary, so tiny, so puny, so sick, anemic, that I would have died myself if God had allowed me to have my way. And of course, God would have allowed me to have my way. He still hasn't taken away from me my will. It still gets in my way once in a while. And if I had insisted, he would have allowed me to have my way. But thank God that he pressured and pressured and pressured and pressured until finally I said, okay, Lord, I don't know what's in it, but I'll go. I had to finish Bible school, which was 3 years afterwards. And that was a hard struggle. The second year, the Lord gave me the baptism in the Holy Spirit. The third year, Linda came to Bible school from somewhere, I don't know where, landed there, and for me, it was a star coming into my life. We met that year and married the following year after that, or that same fall we met. We married. 1942 and went to, or 1941, and in 42 we married, went to Raton, New Mexico, spent a year and a half in Raton, New Mexico, in a little run-down place that was so far from my goal that you couldn't possibly imagine me, Paul Finkenbinder, being satisfied, living in a situation with the building that we lived in was an old warehouse type place. And this is Raton, New Mexico, where the winters got to 20 and 30 degrees below zero. When it snowed in the house. The cracks made it snow in the house. There was no running water, no inside toilet facilities. We had an out. This is Raton, New Mexico. I mean, the United States of America. Outdoor privy. 20 degrees below weather, outdoor privy. We had to walk about a half a block for a water tap to bring water, and I had to go out and bring the water all the time. I mean, this is what God was putting me into. You know, my ambitions, my goals, and I had said yes. And the crazy thing about it is that both Linda and I enjoyed that 18 lousy months that we spent there. We enjoyed it. If there's one thing that I want to leave with you tonight, Christians, is that there's only one place ever to be, and that's in the center of God's will. Nothing matters when you are in the center of God's will. Money doesn't matter. How much you're going to make doesn't matter. Where your source is going to be from doesn't matter. Where you're going to be living doesn't matter. What your living conditions will be doesn't matter. What kind of clothes you can wear doesn't matter. What kind of a car you can drive doesn't matter. Where city you'll be living in doesn't matter. Is it hot? Is it cold? Doesn't matter. Is it rainy? Is it dry? Or is it oceanside? Or is it desert? It doesn't matter. Only one thing makes it beautiful. You know you're in the center of God's will. The center of God's will is the green foliage. The center of God's will is the fresh air. Not the outside air that you see and breathe. The center of God's will is the beautiful scenery. The center of God's will is the financial supply. We made that 1 year that we were in Raton, year and a half, $800 for the full solid year. One time we didn't have anything to eat for lunchtime, and I was refunfuñando. How do you say that in English, refunfuñando? Complaining, like complaining. I was complaining and mad and upset, and I said, "Han," I said, "let's go out and visit our parishioners. We have three." That didn't take very long to make the round. We went to our first parishioner right about 10:45. They didn't invite us for lunch. We spent there long enough time so that they would have caught on, but they didn't seem to or didn't want to. We went to our second parishioner. They didn't invite us for lunch. This was now about 12:15, you know. They didn't invite us for lunch. We stayed there long enough so that they could have seen, you know. They were cooking and everything, you know, and how it smelled. And I was so hungry, we had nothing to eat. They didn't invite us for lunch. We went to our third parishioner, and by this time it was 12:45. They knew that we could not have eaten, you know. Well, why would we have visited, you know? They had to know that. I think they had to know that. They didn't invite us for lunch. The Trujillos didn't invite us. Nobody invited us for lunch. So we took off for the house. And if I was mad before, I was mad afterward. I was saying, "God, what on earth is going on?" And I didn't know whether I was madder at God or at my parishioners, or at myself, or at Raton. Got back to our warehouse thing, and on the store doorsteps of the warehouse was two of them, weren't there? Three? Good night. Three, huh? Three great big, high, tall paper sacks jam-packed full of food. It wasn't an angel, no big mystery. It did turn out to be an angel, but a human angel. We found out several days later who was it had brought it by. They'd come by, they told us later, and knocked at the door, and nobody was there, and they had the food to give us. And they wanted to share fellowship with us and bring us the food, you know, enough food to last for 3-4 weeks. And we weren't there, you know, and they wondered where we were at that time, you know, because we weren't there. God must have wondered where we were too, you know, because we walked out of his sight. That's why God couldn't help us. We had walked out of his sight. If we had stayed where he was, we would have gotten the food, you know. Anyway, lessons like that over and over again until I have finally learned, Christian, that the only place to be is in the center of God's will. So you have a decision to make. What is that decision going to cost you? How many people are you going to turn away from you? What will that decision cost you financially? What will that decision cost you in goodwill toward your neighbors? What will that decision cost you as far as the image, your image is concerned before the public? And I feel that I'm talking to somebody directly tonight. What is that decision going to cost your image? What is it going to cost you? Don't ask those questions. The question is it God's will or is it not God's will? If it's not God's will, the whole thing will be a failure. If it is God's will, all of those other disadvantages will turn into advantages. It's a very simple equation. It doesn't have to do with, is it right? Is it wrong? What will people think? What will they not think? How much money is there? Is it? How much money is there not in it? Am I going to make out? Will I not make out? Is there any future advancement in it? Do I have any goals? Will I reach my goals? It doesn't have to do with that. It has nothing to do with that. The question is it God's will or is it not God's will? Pure and simple. And of course, the question comes up, how do you know when it's God's will and how do you know when it's not God's will? There's something inside of your being. Allow me to use the vernacular guts that lets you know when the thing is right and when the thing is wrong. If you're close enough to the Lord, you'll sense when a thing is wrong. A horrible fear will rest upon you. If it's wrong, you'll know it. If it's right, something beautiful inside of your being will let you know, okay, that is right. Walk therein. And even sometimes when you don't get the feeling, God has other ways of talking to you to let you know what it is that you should do. I stood in front of the desk of Channel 2 in San Salvador in the year of 1959. It was a matter of signing a year's contract to go on the air there on television. This is a long drive from Raton, New Mexico, I'll tell you right now. We're now in 1959. The other took place in 1938, 39, 40, 41, 42. Now it's 1959. Throughout those years, God taught us a lot of things. In 1943, we found ourselves going on the way to El Salvador in Central America. Little by little, things kept getting better, and things kept getting easier, and things kept flowing more solidly. We kept having our same ups and downs. But the ups of the ups were higher, and the downs of the downs were also higher. Does that make sense? Huh? The ups of the ups were higher, and the downs of the downs were also higher. So that when I averaged it out, the line was going upward in ease of life, in more comfort, in more home situations that were better for us, in more friends, in every way, in more health, in more money, in every way. The average was going up. Never look at your life, take this with you, never look at your life through a microscope. It'll kill you. And it's not because of the magnification of the microscope. That's also bad. But worse than that is the fact that a microscope can only take in a tiny, tiny portion of your life. And it's not fair to make a judgment on one little tiny portion of your life. You may catch it at a low ebb. And it'll give you the idea that all of your life is that low ebb. And it can kill you. If you don't kill yourself, you know. Look at your life through a wide-angle lens so you see many lows and many highs, and then average it out, and you'll find out things aren't as bad as you thought they were. Even your lowest points, should you right now be at a very, very low point in your life. We're really sometimes very insincere. We say, God, what a low point! And we never say, wow, what a high point. We see our lows, never see our highs. So we never ever see life out. Got to average it out. It's the averages that become meaningful. The averages. Not the way highs, not the way lows, but the averages. And besides that, everybody enjoys a high. And you can never have it without a low. If it's always high, there are no highs. If it's always high, there are no high. Let me say that again. If it's always high, there are no high. High and low is a relative figure. And it's only as high as the low is low. So you want it higher, it's got to be preceded by a lower. And the lower the preceding one is, the higher the upcoming one is. But if it's the same level all the time, no matter how high it is, you won't notice it. You won't see it. So it's the average that counts. The average that counts. Well, how did I get off onto that? Where was I? Huh? Oh, TV station. Right. Okay. So I'm saying, Lord, because I had talked previously to the people and they had said, come back on this Monday and we'll have the contract made out to go on TV, 1959, the latter days of 59. We'll have the contract all made out to go on TV. I've been already on the radio part of this for the last, some 5 or 6 years. So they knew who I was, Hermano Pablo, and I walked in and out of there. They had added this TV channel, and so I was ready to go on TV. Black and white, of course, and no videotape equipment. Nothing was videotaped. They didn't even have videotapes in those days. It was all black and white and solid on the air. What went on, irretrievably on, unfortunately. And, but you know, you don't know these things. I mean, it's how dumb we get. So anyway, I saw the contract and went over the corner and looked at it, and I saw one thing that he put on there. Duración de contrato. Duration of contract. Un año. 1 year. And I thought, 1 year? Impossible. I'm talking about how God speaks to us. How God talks to us. It may not always be through that exhilarating thing. It may not always be through the gloom that he speaks to us. But he'll always let us know what his will. Somehow we'll always know inside of us the thing that we should do. We'll know what is right. We'll know what is not right. And knowing what is right is all that matters. And if you honestly take that right step, never look back. Never look back. Never say to yourself, I should not have taken that step. Never allow the devil to trap you by saying, I should never have taken that step. In the first place, trust your heart. Trust the past decisions of your heart. And in the second place, even if it's a wrong one, we can't go wrong. Romans 8:28. All things. You see, that's a fantastic thing. Even if it's a wrong one, you can't go wrong. All things work together for good. I've pulled boo-boos. I really have. And I have had the sin of looking back and saying, boy, that was a boo-boo. And then God says, son, so it was. So it was. So okay, so what? Let's go back to Romans 8:28. All things work together for good to those that love the Lord. And my son, that doesn't just mean the things that I perform. That also means the boo-boos that you pull. And it also means the satanic depression that comes upon you. So that, my little dear child, you can't go wrong. We can't go wrong. The boo-boos turn out to be for our good. The boo-boos turn out to be, we can't go wrong. Oh, what a life. And I want you to, my wife knows this, I want to tell you that as I'm saying it to you here, this is not the product of Hermano Pablo speaking at the Santana chapter. It isn't a momentary thing. It's my life. It really is my life. I just know that I cannot go wrong. For even when I do, God adjusts it with Romans 8:28. So I can't go wrong. I cannot go wrong. Anyway, I looked at the contract. 1 year. The 1 year, so 1 year, so okay. But I was paying on radio $156 a month. A month. $133 a month. Now that was a big hunk. For a missionary on the field to raise $133 a month, that was a chore. God saw us through it, miraculously. I signed some dumb contracts, and God saw it through us, and he had mercy on us. So, but now it's not $133 a month. It's $300 a week. $300 a week. Now you don't have to be, you know, a very big mathematician to know that means $1,200 some months and $1,500 some other months. You know that. How much it is in a year, I could never figure that out. That's too much. That threw me, you know. But a month, I could tell. And I said, God, 1,200 some months, 1,500 other months, impossible. Then I said, Lord, you know our reach. Give me the feeling. Either the exhilarating feeling, which means go ahead and sign it, son, or that gloomy feeling which says to me, don't sign it, son. Give me the feeling. So I waited. Please, Lord, give me the feeling. No feeling. No feeling. I said, God, I said, I'm here in this office. People are typing all around me, and I'm all by myself in this corner with you. Let me know. Do I sign it or don't I say it? It's a big thing, God. It's a big thing. You know, it's a big thing. And I mean, you know, in 1959, many of you would remember this. You'll be able to read this. In 1959, you couldn't write in the States to your friends, not in my circles, and ask them to help you go on television. I mean, it wasn't even called television in my circles in those days. It was called television. It would have been enough to have my friends, my close buddies, throw themselves at the mercy of God in fasting and prayer, asking God to bring Paul back into the fold again, but surely he was lost. So I couldn't write to anybody. I couldn't write to a single soul. I mean, this had to be a contract between me and God and me alone. But God wouldn't answer. I said, please, God, you got to let me know. The gloom or the exhilaration, all I have to do is let me know. Just let me feel it, God. Nothing. Heaven was silent. As though God had moved away or something. I couldn't touch him. I couldn't touch him. Finally, though, it came through. It came through. And what came through was in the silence. The silence. In fact, the silence contained the message. In fact, the silence was the message. When I finally heard it, the silence was the message. And when it came through loud and clear. Son, I'm leaving it up to you. Oh. $300 a week times 52, a year contract. You know that I reneged on that. I said, God, I can't. He said, fine, then don't. Just like that. But I said, God, I could point my finger at the president of the republic and say, sir, you need to receive Christ in your heart. And God said, well, then go ahead and sign it. But I said, Lord, I said, 300 times 52. And God said, well, then don't sign it. But I said, the opportunity, we've never had it like this before. Never. The doors are open. Think what we could do. Well, then let's sign it. How in the world, God, can I be expected to carry a load like this? You don't have to, son. Don't sign it. I could never pin God down. He was like mercury. You know? But it's like I'm telling you, even when God doesn't give you the usual signs, you still know what you have to do. Don't ask me how I knew. I knew I had to sign the contract. I just knew. I don't know how. I knew I had to sign the contract. It's that inward heart thing. You know what you have to do. Now, in Latin America, I have to use my full name. I just can't go by Hermano Pablo on official documents. And in Latin America, you have to use your mother's maiden name as well as your own father's name. Finkenbein, that's long enough, you know. My mother's name is Argetzinger. So I had to sign the whole thing. Paul Edwin Finkenbinder Arget. And I mean, I could have stopped anywhere longer, you know. That's why I'm telling you this. It practically went around the other side of the page. Paul Edwin Finkenbinder Argetzinger. And I could have stopped anywhere along there and not fulfilled the contract, you know. But I stayed with it. Hard and fast. Stayed with it. Paul Edwin Finkenbinder Argetzinger. Signed it and turned it in. That was Monday to go on the next Sunday. I had never been on TV in all of my life, except when you come to the States and the pastors put you in front of this camera and, you know, they say, they don't say it. In fact, some even may. But it comes across very, very clearly. A real live missionary right from the jungle. Yeah. That's the only television experience that I had had. I didn't know anything else besides that, you know. And so to go on television, and I mean on a weekly basis with a scheduled telecast. I didn't know it up to that time. I mean, I didn't know it, but up to that time, 1960, no Christian scheduled television program had ever been on the air. This was the first in the world outside of the States. No missionary television had, on a scheduled basis, had ever been signed up or had ever gone on the air up to that time. We were the first ones. I've been the first ones on a whole bunch of things that have happened, by the way. No big deal, except that you're out in front. You're the one that gets the nose clobbered each time. I'll tell you right now. If you want to be on the vanguard, just get used to getting your nose clobbered and have people look. If you're out on the vanguard in something for a time, until God proves you to be right, you are all by yourself. And hang in there. Hang in there in faith, all by yourself. And then lap it up when it comes afterwards. Well, I signed the contract, and we did go on the air. We were on the air a full year, 1960. The last program was the Christmas program of 1960. Then we had to come home on furlough. I'm saying this to tell you that besides the tremendous amount of outpouring of God's
of the knowledge of God throughout El Salvador and Nicaragua and Guatemala, different parts of that television program. Churches were established. I can't tell you how many people were saved. The Baptist Commission, the Baptist Church named the commission to come to me personally and to give me a beautiful document and to state the fact that I had done more in 1 year's time to move upon the peoples of El Salvador with the gospel of Christ than they had done in 77 years that they had been in the country of El Salvador. To God and to television, to the medium, be the glory. But I say this to tell you this, that we ended the year in the black. God supplied the need. How? I don't even know. It wasn't until several months later that the stateside press knew that I had gone on television. I don't even know. It came from a whole bunch of different sources. But I say this to tell you that something inside of you lets you know that you are doing the right thing. And when that's inside of you, you don't care what the disadvantages are. It doesn't matter how black one side of the ledger looks. It doesn't matter how much in debt you are. It doesn't matter what the world says. It doesn't matter what the employers say. It doesn't matter what anybody says. It doesn't matter. You don't base it on everything looking right, on the future looking beautiful, on the papers looking exactly right, on the figures looking right, on the computer feeding you positive results. It's not based on that. It's based on the knowledge that you're in the center of God's will. Frankly, nothing else matters. Frankly, nothing else matters. Should I tonight be speaking to somebody specifically, may I say to you, hang in there. Don't give up. Hang in there. You're going to have your glory. When that comes, people come around patting you on the back. Enjoy when it comes. But hang in there. Your stability is God. Your steadfastness is God. Your security is God. Your assurity is God. Your solidity is God. The whole thing is God. And with God, we can't lose, because even when we're losing, Romans 8:28, even when we pull boo-boos, Romans 8:28, even when we make a wrong turn, Romans 8:28, even when we make a mistake, Romans 8:28. And God says to me, even your mistakes, son, work together for good to those that love the Lord. Can't lose. Can't lose. Hang in there.
This has been a prime time message from the International Tape Library of Hermano Pablo Ministries.